I'm Tom. That's Mike. On the line, two very good friends of the show, coming together for the first time, kind of grabbing their wrists and shaking hands epically, much like the Mega Powers. Rob Naylor, Leonard F. Chikaris, and glad to have you guys on the show. First question off the bat, how epic has Ben Pasco's vest?
I'll start. Ben Pasco's vest is amazing. It's got the Heartbreak Kid on it, you know? I mean, it'd be a very welcome addition to any young man in San Francisco. It's unbelievable. But Ben Pasco pulls that shit off. I thoroughly enjoy it. And he's a nice kid. Now, he came all the way from Boston, right, to go to that show in Philly.
Somewhere in Massachusetts.
You gotta give props to that.
That show in Philly. Just some random show in Philly. It could have been any show, really.
Yeah, what was that show? Oh, yeah.
Break the Barrier 2.
Yeah, it was not Break the Barrier 2. It was Chikara King of Champions. It was amazing. It's my favorite.
Rob, I've got a question for you. You mentioned, and folks, I'm sure Tom will have something up on the website that this says the show is all over the place. But just in case you didn't read this, the show's going to be all over the place. Rob, did you attend Break the Barrier?
I was not at Break the Barrier. Here's the thing, though. I was a big fan of Al Isaacs and Scoops, and I knew the show happened, and I knew Nick Gage wrestled Justice Payne. I think he did. I'm going to go on the record of saying that's the only match I remember happening at Break the Barrier, and I really wanted to see it. I was not there. I wasn't at many CW arena shows, Lenny, until probably 2003, believe this or not. Like, everyone's like, I went to ECW shows, but not the Philly ECW shows. I went to the Scranton or the Lancaster or the Lebanon or the Hamburg or every ECW show that wasn't in dirty, dirty ass.
Wilkes-Barre.
I've been to Wilkes-Barre, Kingston Armory. My mom would not allow me to go to Philadelphia as a youth. You know, you don't want to go there. You'll get shot. My mom's a very intelligent and bright woman. So, yeah, she wouldn't let me go. So, like, I'd have to go to all these other towns to go see ECW. So the big thing's always like, Naylor was at all the good old ECW shows. The fuck I was. I wasn't at any of them. I went to see Cactus and Sabu in 1994 at Hamburg Fieldhouse, though.
At the Hamburg Fieldhouse. Yes, classic.
Were you there as well?
Yes, I was. That was one of the first shows that I was ever at.
Wow, and you were also – see, I didn't know Lenny until about last year, and we became fast friends real quick because we found out that we lived the exact same life but except in like maybe 45 to 50 minutes away from each other. You were also at the the Catholic Youth Center was the hottest building ECW was running in 1997, and Lenny, were you at the show right before Barely Legal as well?
I certainly was. I may have told this story on the show, and if I have, you guys can stop me, but Rob might not have heard it. Yes, not only was I at all those CYC shows, while we were waiting outside, New Jack comes out, and he goes, just to no one in particular, goes, hey, is there a movie theater around here? And, like, nobody says anything because they're, like, kind of intimidated because it's New Jack and it's Scranton. So I'm like, yeah, I go, if you just go down this road here, go down two lights, make a right, and then go down, like, three blocks, and there's a theater right there on your right. And New Jack pauses the beat and goes, oh, cool. Can I borrow your car? No. I was not going to loan my car to New Jack because, again, I was a young man at the time of, 19 or whatever it was, and if I wanted my car to disappear forever, that would have been an awesome magic trick. But, like, luckily I didn't have my car, and I'd walked the show. But an awesome story would have been if I did let New Jack borrow my car, and, like, then he just returned it as a burned-out wreck and was like, hey, man, here's the keys. That's how I found it.
Wow. That all those Scranton shows, Lenny, there was an energy in that building. Those Scranton fans were so hungry for wrestling action at that point, and they'd had the WWF for a long time before Bishop Dottillo, and this is how I know all these things. Bishop Dottillo's like, no, guys said suck it, get away. So, like, they took it away, but then ECW, the cleaner wrestling around those days, they ended up getting in there for a couple shows, and, like, they would pack the place, and it was a very loud. The volume was unbelievable, the crowd. And I remember the show I went to. My friend – I went to Shippensburg University in 1997. So my friend Dan was from 40 Fort, which is a – or Dallas, one of the two. So,
I'm from 40 Fort.
Well, 40 Fort is the greatest name of a town in history. I hope Maurice Seberg is from there as well. However – and this is like the show for only the Northeast PA people, by the way.
I was going to say, I'm completely fucking lost.
Yes, you need to be. So anyway, so I check this shit. Dan Podell. Dan Podell's like, Taylor, let's go to see ECW in Scranton. I'm like, yeah, let's do this. So we go to Scranton, and I couldn't believe it. Like Lenny said, the line was just crazy, and like it was right before they went on pay-per-view. They had been there like maybe once or twice before, and the BWO was like the hottest thing in the business if you went to these shows, because I think everyone that came into the show bought a BWO t-shirt. My friend Dan thought the BWO started before the NWO. That's how big ECW was in Scranton, that people didn't even watch WCW and they thought like NWO copied BWO. I'm like, no, dipshit, it went this way. But still, like, it was just unbelievable. And I remember being at the show because like I saw a fan cam later of this whole show that aired on TV, but it was fan cammed as well. Gabe fan cammed it. And Gabe, at the beginning of the show, zooms into the bleachers, and it's me and my friends. And I'm like, wow, it's Kismet. He knew I was going to be there and be friends with him later. No, it wasn't. There was this girl with giant bombs named Chastity, who I guess was like, yeah, big-time film star, I'm told. So, yeah, she was there, and she was planted in the audience wearing a BWO shirt so she could run into the ring and Stevie could make out with her. So that's why.
We were probably sitting right next to each other because, first of all, at that show, it was the first time that they were there was the TV right before Barely Legal. So it was like March. That was the very first time that they were there. And, you know, I was all decked out BWO myself. And they did a thing where, like, we were all waiting in the stairwell and they videotaped it. And when they played it on TV, they were like, people are going crazy. There's people outside the BWO locker room. And, like, it's like 20 people and dead center is me. And then later in the show, my younger brother was there. Like, you know, again, 1997. Come on, my younger brother was dressed up like what was the character name when Feinstein was six?
7-Eleven.
That was
11. Yeah.
Right. So my little brother, who was like 5 years younger than me at the time, would have been like 14. He's dressed up as that. Chastity was in the crowd all over him because she thought it was the cutest thing. Like, all these little kids all dressed up like six. She thought it was the cutest thing. So she was up in that same section where we were, and then when the Sandman makes his entrance, it was like directly down the bleachers to my right.
That's freaking crazy. That's exactly the way it went. So we're like sitting next to each other, apparently. But yeah, like, that show was unbelievable. And I remember I had gone to the CYC shows for WWF. Little bit nicer security staff. We're all in line and everyone's loud. We're like, ECW. And this big, big African American just walks out the door and he's like, right now, telling all y'all, shut the fuck up. I'm like, what? And like, everyone got really quiet quick. And like, this guy just is like, go do that. So then we all walked in very quietly then. And then we got all ECW'd out once we got in there. But I was like, wow, what a change this is from when WWF comes to the Catholic Youth Center.
I was like, geez. He only run there like three times that year, and then like there was some other fly by night indie promotion like WWA that ran like Abdul the Butcher versus Road Warrior Hawk on top like late that year. I think that was like the end of it all.
Yeah, because in 98 they moved to the Kingston Armory, so I think they really only did those shows like in 97 because they did, and Rob, you probably went nuts for it, they did Sabu and RVD against the Eliminators on one of those shows, didn't they?
That was the TV taping with the ladder.
And didn't Mike Awesome debuted on one of those shows too, right? Like he came in as like Shane Douglas's like hitman, and I think he kind of disappeared soon after.
See, yeah, this is where I'm going to disagree with Lenny real quick. I think the first show was not the March show. There was a Phantom January show, which Mike Awesome was on. You're right, Mike, because there was a show in January, and that was the one my friend Dan went to, and I didn't get to go to that one. But he's like, dude, you wouldn't believe how crazy it is in Scranton. And I'm like, Scranton? I'm like, Philly, let's go to – no, Scranton. So I was like, all right. So we went to this TV taping in March, and March 3rd – no, it wasn't March 13th. That was the pay-per-view. No, April 13th. Regardless, it was March. So, like, we saw this match, and, like, it was cool because in Scranton, you guys got ECW TV. We didn't get it in Shamokin. So, like, I'm at my friend's house in Dallas, and I'm like, this is fucking crazy. Like, we got home from the show, and we got to watch the Sabu and the Eliminators – and RVD in another ladder match that was taped at the arena in, like, January of 1997. And I was like, wow, what a charmed life you guys live up here. Because, like, Shamokin didn't have it. Like, you had to have, like, a satellite dish or some shit. But, like, man, I will say this. I go so far to see wrestling being a Shamokinite. Like, I feigned an injury to go to Geisinger Medical Center so I could watch the last champions in the lobby. I mean, Come on, man. Like, my friend had, like, an old-ass lady aunt that lived, like, 40 minutes away. And I'm like, do you talk to your aunt often? No. Well, talk to her more because she gets TBS. So, like, we go to this old lady's house. And, like, there was this big dude that lived there. And, like, possibly developmentally challenged. And I'm not putting that down or anything. But he'd be there and he'd be like, he'd run up to me while we're watching, like, Steve Williams and Dr. Death and Gordy against the Steiners. He'd be like, I like Blair from Facts of Life. And I'd be like high-fiving him. And like, there's this big, shiny Blair from Facts of Life. And I never will forget
did
this.
Did he mistake Gordy for Blair from Facts of Life or something? He was like that out of it, maybe?
I don't know. But yeah, there was a big Blair from Facts of Life shrine in this fucking house. And I was just like, what is going on? But yeah.
No, wait. I was going to say, he liked the wrong cast member of Facts of Life.
He should have liked Joe?
Exactly.
Okay.
No, not the one that looked like Trent Powers.
Oh, wow. That's an astute observation right there. Okay. I like Tootie. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
How about Trent Powers running ECW that he had in, like, early 94? He came and got, like, title matches against Shane Douglas. It was ridiculous.
He did because I was there, and that's when we stopped going to Hamburg, Lenny, because, like, at the show, and, like, we got to see Too Cold and Dean Malenko, and Benoit against Taz, and Doink the Clown Osborne against Too Cold, and then the Public Enemy and the Bad Breed, and then the next month it was like, yeah, here's, Jim Powers coming in to challenge Shane Douglas for the world title. It's like, okay. And then here's Tommy, what the hell's the guy's name, Tommy...
Tommy Cairo
is coming in for the big double main event. I'm like, wait, what? So that's the thing start going downhill for Hamburg. Because I remember when Gabe was running Ring of Honor in 2002, or RF and Gabe, I should say. I remember I was the guy that pushed so hard. I'm like, you got to run the Hamburg Fieldhouse. There's history.
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
And like, I
Bill the Butcher, right?
Yes, and I'd be like, there's radio stations, and I'm like, you could get a hold of this, and it's a town that just really wants wrestling again, and there was no pre-sale. And I always said, I'd argue that, like, Hamburg's like a walk-up town. At least that's always thought I thought. Hamburg was a walk-up kind of town. And I guess they got shook when the pre-sale wasn't what it needed to be, and then they moved it to Philly to that wonderful Murphy Rec Center. So I was like, oh, man. But, yeah, like, Hamburg is a good place. I live, like, maybe 15 minutes from Hamburg. I know a girl that goes to clubs I go to whose parents own the Hamburg Fieldhouse, which, you know, what an opener that one is. Hey, I'm a big fan of Greg the Hammer Valentine. You know, he won the IC belt there in 83, right? But, yeah, it was unbelievable because, like, so much of me loves Hamburg. Like, it's right off I-78, kind of, and, like, it's a great place. There's an Arby's near it, 5 for $5, you know. See, wrestling fans also have to be obese. This is what we all do. We go to shows. Everyone knows the same people and the same dives to go to. So you got to go and get the Arby's 5 for $5 and hit up Hamburg Fieldhouse. But, like, I remember when I went to Hamburg Fieldhouse, I was like, wow, you know, this is crazy. Apparently there's some of the same bars from, like, the late 70s that were open and the early 80s are still open today, like, on the streets of – the street even of Hamburg. Like, it's just wild for me to think about. Like, quick draw, Rick McGraw had a beer right there. Like, that's the wrestling history that I can appreciate. Maybe it's just me, but that's what I'm saying.
No, believe me, good wrestling needs to come back up into the northeastern Pennsylvania area, whether it be Scranton or Wilkes-Barre or wherever. There's tons of wrestling up here, but it's all trash. Nobody who goes to those shows is going to listen to this. It's all trash. It upsets me very much.
It's terrifying. Yeah. And the last place I remember going and geographically, I'm not really as sound as you guys, so let me know if I'm wrong here. Hazleton, that's kind of near you guys, right? No?
Well, it's actually
like an hour.
From Wilkes-Barre, yeah.
That's like past Schuylkill County. I remember the last show I went to in Hazleton, Samoa Joe against AJ Styles, 2006 or 7, and like special guest Larry Zbyszko. So I was really stoked about this show. And then midway during the show, I talked to one of my little lady friends who came back into town recently. So I went out to my car to, you know, whisper sweet nothings to her. And I locked my keys in my car upon leaving my car. So I'm stuck outside in Hazleton and I don't get to see the rest of the show. And then a cop comes to help help me out, like, hey, little buddy, are you okay? And I'm like, yes, I don't know what happened. So he's like, you better get inside. There was a shooting right down the block just last week. I'm like, oh, my God. I didn't know Hazleton was, like, this terrible place. Now, granted, if you're from Hazleton and you're listening, I'm sure it's a wonderful place to live. However, I got a little scared about Hazleton because
– nah, people from Hazleton know how terrible it is. So
all right.
I think if anybody from Hazleton – but, no, just real quick, just because we were talking about and we're jumping all over the place – there actually was an ECW show in January of 97. It was when Mike Awesome did debut, because Rick Rude, remember, debuted around that time with the mask on and stuff like that. And Mike Awesome, Naylor, actually beat Davey Jericho, if you remember Davey Jericho.
Oh, my Jericho God. Pins. Kid Cash against Mike Awesome.
Tyler Jericho.
Davey Moore and Tyler Jericho against Mike Awesome and Scran. I got to get the fan cam of that one immediately. You just sold so much.
I think it's on TV. Like, I don't know if you have access to get these ECW TV shows from 1997. Like they did film every one for TV, so you can probably see young Leonard Chikaris and young Naylor on those BWO DVDs, which is what I wanted to tell you, Tom, by the way. We got to get that picture and put it up as a screen cap for the website. But
yeah, if anyone has it, it'll become like the new logo. We'll send it over to Hayes.
I'll throw you another one. At Barely Legal for the main event when, the three guys, Sandman, Funk, and Richards, Stevie comes out first. I love Stevie Richards. Love Stevie Richards back then. Love Stevie Richards today. He's in the ring, right, and he's all, like, focused and whatnot, and the other BWO clowns are all around him, and they pull in, like, a tight shot, and there's some jag standing almost in the crowd right over his shoulder doing, like, the Big Daddy Cool Diesel taunt. I don't want to say that jag was me, but, again, it's like when the shot is framed, it looks like it's Stevie Richards and me, and we're the only two in the shot. It looks fantastic.
Wow.
I thought Stevie you were going to say you were Reggie Bennett.
Stevie Richards, by the way, if you lived in Scranton, you didn't think Terry Funk was going to win the world title, even though it was so blatantly obvious. You thought Stevie Richards was going to win the belt, because Stevie Richards was about as over as Hogan in 85 in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Yeah. It was wild at the time. And then that nothing really happened with Stevie, unfortunately.
Well,
he never.
Do you know he was supposed to win the TV title that year instead of Taz?
No, I didn't know that.
All right. You know the whole spiel where Taz has the rematch with Sabu on Raven's Going Away show?
Yes.
And Douglas is up watching it, and he's like, oh, blah, 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 blah. Like, Taz, you're a bum. You can't beat me. Douglas comes down. Taz beats him in the 3 minutes, and he becomes the TV champion. That was supposed to be Stevie. They even had, like, press posters out because Stevie was supposed to defend the TV title at What was the Florida pay-per-view called?
Hardcore Heaven 97. Horrible show.
Hardcore Heaven. I was there for that, too. But supposed to defend the belt against Little Guido on that show, and it was a week before that show happened where ECW ran a show at St. Joe's Gym in Hazleton, and the main event was Raven and Richards versus the Eliminators. And on TV, they said, Stevie Richards was injured when he had, like, a guardrail dropped on his head? No. He got injured when Cronus did, like, they did total elimination. And he got wrecked on it. They, like, got everywhere out of the building as soon as the match was over. Stevie was laid out in the middle of the ring. Ambulance came out. They had to clear out the whole area. It was crazy. And that's why Stevie got injured. He got taken off the pay-per-view, went to WCW shortly thereafter. But he was supposed to win the TV title in June.
Wow, look at that. The
insider, baby.
The insider. You knew it was supposed to happen. Like, another thing real quick about Hamburg, I'm going back to Hamburg. We gotta go back there every time. When I saw that first ECW show with Sabu and Cactus Jack, now remember, I've told this a million times too, but I got my first Observer, much like a girl coming into womanhood. My first Observer came around like September 93, guys. So like that was right when Sabu debuted in the States. So like everything was Sabu, 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 and I'm reading this stuff and I'm so excited to see Sabu. So like I get to know all about Sabu, and then Sabu's gonna wrestle Cactus and it's gonna be in Hamburg and I'm gonna see it live and I'm so excited. It's our second match ever. So I get to go see that, and like I came away from the show with a piece of chair, because as you know, Hamburg has wooden-ass chairs, and they've always had wooden chairs since the 70s. So they splintered a chair in either the Bad Breed against Public Enemy or Sabu and Cactus Jack, which were two of like, my favorite matches of all time when they happened at the time. So like I took that with pride leaving the building. Like, yeah, I got my ECW souvenir. And like I remember, like, this is a funny story. I remember like 3 or 4 years ago, Ian Rotten and IWA was like still in prominence, and Ian's doing like all of these these like all these like charitable like auctions and stuff, and I'm like, you know what? I should probably be a bigger person and say, here, Ian, have this chair. Auction it off for the good of this business. And then I like smacked myself in the fucking face and said, no, don't fucking do that. So I kept the chair, thank God. But like, what a mistake that would have been in hindsight. But yeah.
I was going to say, I have one from when they chokeslam, from the arena, the entranceway where you come in.
Yeah.
They chokeslam Tommy Dreamer, Brian Lee chokeslam him out of there one of those times through three tables.
Yes.
I think I, at my old house, I still have half of one of those tables. As soon as it happened, I told my little brother, I'm like, here's the key to the car, go grab one of those pieces of the tables and put it in the car now.
Fucking run! Yes, dude, I would have loved to go to these shows. Like, you're so lucky. Like, I didn't get to go to any of the legit ECW shows. Like,
now, did you ever go to any of the shows at the Flagstaff and Jim Thorpe?
Yeah, I did. I had a radio show in college at Ship University, and one time I was talking about Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, and I called it crappy towns like Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, because I think I had heard that somewhere else before, and someone put out a complaint to my director, and I got a lot of shit over it, because, like, I meant it in love. Jim Thorpe's a wonderful place. Like, Flagstaff is a cliff. I mean, it's awesome, right? So, yes, I've been to the Flagstaff as well. Not as much as I would have liked to have been, but, okay, real quick, Lenny, Mike, Tom, all you guys. Have you guys – I know I was a huge ECW mark, so, like, I'd get, like, the RF video catalogs or all the different tape lists, and they'd be like, ECW team shoot interview by today. And, like, it would be, like, this round table before what they would call, like – they'd have, like, fan weeks, and they'd have, like, a round table with, like, Scorpio and Public Enemy and a bunch of people. They did one in 95, 96, and 97. Well, I have the one from – yeah.
It was for the February shows where, like, Dave Shearer or whomever would have his, like, whole band of, like, internet people come to the shows.
Cyber Slam. Yeah.
They became Cyber Slam, but in 95, it was, like, Mountaintop Madness, and it was something else. It was in the summer of 95, and, like, people from around the world, including a young Dave Prazak, went to these things. And I have this tape of this. I have a tape of this complete fucking Tool going, and you could feel the heat on your arm. And, like, it's like this kid that was in high school. Granted, if I would have made this thing when I was in high school in 1995, it would have been just as dorky and, completely horrifying. But this dude made it, and he's doing these stand-ups. And then it would go to the clips, or it would go to, like, footage of the round table or footage from the weekend. But then in between, this fucking dorky-ass dude is just like, and ECW. And, like, I'm like, oh, this guy's fucking great. So we'd all sit around laughing at him, and, like, it was Dave Lagana. Like, it's so funny. I told Chris Hero, I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, I'm bringing you this tape. Lagana, the early years. And he's like, what are you talking about? So, like, and Prazak knows about the tape, too, because then I told Prazak I had the tape, and he goes, you could feel the heat on your arm. And, like, we even knew the same line, so we're, like, laughing about it. So I told Dave Lagana I had the tape, and he didn't seem too pleased that I had it. And he's like, burn all available copies. I was like, man, you're awesome. You wrote for Friends. But, yeah, like, it's really funny to look back.
Hashtag I want that burned.
Oh, it's so great. And, like, it's funny because I thought you might have been at this thing, Jakarsson, because they have footage of all the fans on the big bus. And it's Jim Thorpe in Philly. So, like, once you said you were at the Philly shows, I'm like, maybe.
Well, here's the thing, though. I never interacted with any of those other people. Like, I would go with my little group of people. It'd be, like, my brother, two of my friends, and then, like, these other two dudes that I met coming to shows. Like, we just, like, it was in, like, you know, the Prodigy days, and it was these two dudes from Virginia I met that they would drive up from Virginia. We would drive from here to Philly. We would meet, and, like, the six of us at most, maybe, like, sometimes, like, eight or nine of us, we would all hang out. And then you just kind of, like, look at everyone, like, how strange everyone was. Like, not that we were better than them. Most of it was fear. A lot of it was fear of a lot of those people. And there were some weird-ass people in those shows. And it didn't matter if they were coming out of Bucks at Dave Shearer or they were, like, sign guy, hat guy, and, like, the weird guy with dreads one time or, you know, whatever his deal was. But I was afraid a lot of those. I was more afraid of the people in the stands than I was of the wrestlers in the ECW days.
That's tremendous. Me too. That's why my mom wouldn't let me go. Like, Rob Naylor. Mommy wouldn't let him go to ECW even though he was 16. Like, it's so freaking lame. Like, really, Mom? Come on. So, like, she would never let me go. And, like, then I'd read about it. And I remember when they had the fire incident in October 95. Like, I just remember thinking, wow.
I was there for that.
Yeah, we were the only one that ever saw that then. Because
we actually had my buddy Tom Richards was on the show and actually gave his take. So I figured in like the plethora of topics we're going to talk about, if maybe we could talk about that real quick, if you want to get both of your takes since you were both there, since it never made tape. And yes, I said tape. You know, if you want to get the night when that happened, I guess we could start with Chikarison.
All right. This is actually a day that I base a lot of my life around. It's that October 28th, 1995.
I love that you know the date. Again, I love that you know the date. It's awesome.
Well, again, I scheduled things purposely so that my wedding is on that day as well. I got married in 2006, and when we were choosing the date, October 28th on a Saturday was available. I'm like, that's the day we're getting married, because I'll never forget that day for the rest of my life. Like, I might forget my anniversary, I'm never forgetting that day. So if I coordinate them together, you know, then it's going to all work out. But, you know, we went to the show, and the whole thing happened, and instead of doing the chair, you know, the way I remember it, instead of doing the chair the normal way, it seemed like a towel was taped to a chair, and then later I heard that instead of just, like, dousing the towel, they dunked the entire chair with towel into, like, a bucket of, like, gasoline or something. Mm-hmm. And not to steal a phrase from Dave Lagana, but when they put branding iron into towel, you could feel the heat in the building on your arm.
On your arm.
And he goes at Funk with the chair. Funk rolls out of the ring. And then when Cactus goes to do it the second time, it was, you know, I was on the bleacher side, the side that he was facing when he came off, and it was like it happened in slow motion. This towel comes off the chair, and it's just floating, this flaming towel floating through the air, lands in the front row, and then they turn the lights off in the building because they were supposed to go through the thing to get Dreamer and Raven up into the Eagle's Nest and crucify Dreamer. So the lights are off in the arena. The whole place is filled with smoke. There's all these little tiny fires that have started in the ring from the gasoline dripping off the chair. So then they blast the ring with a fire extinguisher. Now there's even more smoke in the building. People are just freaking out trying to get out of the ring. The day before, I had broke my leg, but I still went to the show with the big giant Big Dick Dudley leg brace on, and I'm in the bleachers trying to scramble out of the thing. And we're driving home, and I'm like, ECW's done. It's over. They killed a fan. They lit a fan on fire. This is done. So we drive home, and, you know, this is the days of, like, Prodigy and, like, rec.sport.alt.prowrestling or whatever. So we go home, and we go on there, and there's no mention of the results from the show. And I'm like, all right. So I check the next morning, and there's no mention of the results from the show. And then TV's on Tuesday. I go, well, there's no TV on Tuesday, then obviously they're done. And TV comes up on Tuesday, and the opening credits start, and the whole show happens, and no mention of it. And I'm like, huh, apparently it never happened. But it happened in my heart, and it happened again for the rest of my life.
Jeez. Yeah, that was nuts. I remember being so scared that they were going to go out. And I just read the Observer a week later. I was just like, oh, no. And what happened there, Funk and Cactus had a big match in, like, January 95, I guess. And a couple matches, actually, the whole year where they would have these matches. They'd introduce fire with the claw, like the T-shirt wrapped on a chair or barbed wire to a chair, and then they'd light it. And when you're in a big building, yeah, that's cool, but, like, Jesus. And I remember, and this is so funny, we're talking 95, we're talking ECW.
Baseball stadiums, like in Japan, you mean?
Yes, and speaking of baseball stadiums, I remember
I threw
the greatest
it out there because I knew.
Yeah, the greatest Observer I've ever read was when Dave was like, and by the way, they're thinking of doing an outdoor King of the Deathmatch type show with Benoit Guerrero and all these people, a major ECW show at freaking show in Scranton in the summer of 95 when Benoit was not in Japan and Guerrero, and they're gonna have Funk and Terry or Funk and Cactus on it. And, like, after I got done dancing around my room when I read this, I was like, oh my god. And then, like, a couple weeks later it was off, but I was like, man, what a cool thing that would have been, like, where the Red Barons
Wow,
not to interrupt that story, but let me just tell that story. What actually happened with that was it was one of the first Flagstaff shows I went to was in April, which was main evented by the tag team of Cactus Jack and Shane Douglas versus Ron Simmons and the Sandman. Anyway, at that show, they made the announcement that they were doing the show in Scranton. And I'm like, they're doing a show in Scranton? So I start freaking out. I go home that weekend, and if you're familiar with the Taylor Music Old Forge area where I lived at the time, the Alexi's Pharmacy and the Sam's Deli in Taylor along Main Street had posters in their window for the ECW show coming on June, whatever date it was, to the Red Baron Stadium. And it had, like, Shane Douglas, and it had Funk, and it had Cactus, all these crazy guys on it. And I'm going out of my mind. I'm like, that is literally, I could ride my bike to there, because I had a car, but I still rode my bike a lot of places. Like, I could ride my bike there. That's how close it was. I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever. And then it just never happened. And then they ended up moving the show. That was what ended up happening with the, they moved it to Jim Thorpe, and that's where, like, the gangsters came in and that whole thing. But what ended up happening was they were going to do the King of the Deathmatch stuff with the fire, and the cost of the asbestos tarp that they would have to put down to protect the AstroTurf would have cost too much, so that's why they scrapped it.
Ah, damn it.
Jeez.
But that would have been awesome. That would have been like a great story.
That would have changed my life if that happened. So back in, when would that be? 95. I would have been 11 years old, and I would have saw that. That would have been the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, 95, in my opinion, 95 was like the apex of ECW. Like, it's funny because Lenny busted out the date. I remember 4-8-95 and 4-15-95. Like, that was like the two ECW shows in a row. And then I remember, like, February 4-22-95. Like, you remember all these days, and it's so funny with wrestling now where you don't remember shit.
Yep.
And it's just like,
no
these
way.
Days meant something, you know? Like, oh my God, that's when Funk came out of the box, and that's when, you know, Sabu and Taz wrestled, you know, Benoit and Malenko, or that's when, you know, the January show, you know, when Raven debuted and Al Snow wrestled. Al Snow wrestled
you
Benoit.
Know, I've been to two WrestleManias before, the one in Philly and the most recent one in Canada that had Rock and Hogan on it. I don't know what years those happened, let alone what days those happened. But, like, those ECW shows from 94 to 97, like, dates are like, well, again, and I stupidly messed up the January and March dates for the TV tapings. But come on, man, April 13th, 1997, man, barely legal. Everybody knows that. Well,
that's like the day, man. It's crazy. It's crazy how we remember these things. And, like, I don't remember, like, I remember, like, the early WrestleMania days, but, like,
yeah,
it's all about the ECW and, like, the ECW pay-per-views. I mean, once they start going monthly, I forget a lot of them, but, like, for a while there, I had all them in my little mental Rolodex. It's like, okay.
I was about ready to say
Tommy there.
Yeah, those were unbelievable. What's up? Are you going to say something, Tom? Please,
I was going to say, I was going to say in that awkward pause, I thought you were going to say that I was in your spank bank, not your other place.
Oh, no, yes. I wasn't in my spank bank. I really liked it, though, but no, it wasn't there. That was like a Nicole Eggert film from 91 or something, but no, the ECW dates weren't part of it. It's okay.
I'm just
said too much. Anyway, so back.
No, man. No, like 91. Like, that's what you would watch. You would watch primetime wrestling because at 11 o'clock came Silk Stockings. Or
Silk
actually, no, like that was Raw. Yes.
Yeah, man. Rhonda Shear. Not as hot as I thought she was when I was a little kid. Like, not doing it for me. Like Tori Spelling. Like, remember, like, this is so stupid. When you're like a little kid and it's like a blonde girl, you're like, she's pretty. Like, I remember I used to think, like, okay, there's gonna be like five people that know what I mean right here, and I swear to God I didn't hit the pipe before I did this show, but like there was a show called Just the Ten of Us.
Dude,
no,
I remember
that. Yes, it was on USA like every morning for like.
There were three girls on that show. One from Nightmare on Elm Street. One was named Jamie Lunar, who was on Melrose Place, who was banging. And there was like a blonde girl. And when I was a little kid, I always thought, "Oh, that blonde's the best at all." No, she's not. Like looking back on it, it's just so funny how we see over children. Maybe that
that's
is.
I think that might be her name. And I not even look it up. And I even look it up, and that's how scary this is. That you said that there's like 10 people, and three of them are probably on the line with you.
I love that you just busted out the shoot name of the blonde
one. You know what? I think a lot of blondes from the late 80s, early 90s don't hold up because they all had that same hair and makeup setup that they had because like one person did it. And somebody needs to figure out who that one person who first did it was and like go back in time like you know, Back in the Future style. And, like, tell her not to do that, so, like, blondes will have different styles and they'll hold up better now in our current day and age. But I was always a fan of Heather Langenkamp because I'm a big horror movie fan. So I'm like, that's the girl from Nightmare on Elm Street. I like her. So, yeah, I'm with you.
Well, see, Rob, the reason I remember is because that was part of the famed ABC TGIF lineup, I guess. Yeah. I remember it was, like, I think it was on either Before or After Perfect Strangers.
And not only that.
It was a spinoff of Growing Pains.
Yes, I was about to mention that. It was a spinoff of Growing Pains. And, yeah, ABC was big into the spinoffs because Perfect Strangers was the one that spinned off Family Matters, which...
Yeah, like, I always thought, like...
They don't do spinoffs anymore, do they?
No, they don't even do sitcoms, really. It's unfortunate. They do, like, some, but they're not, like, the old sitcom. Like, there needs to be, like, a nuclear family that's, like, lost in sitcoms now. Granted, I wouldn't watch it now anyway, but, like, back in the day, you need, like, more old, like, slutty mothers, like Mona.
I love how you could have gone to Peggy Bundy, but you immediately went to Mona.
Oh, man, Mona, the original redheaded slut. She was awesome, and, like, you had so much good TV, and, like, you know, Balky Bartokamus, like, right now, people are like, really? But no, he also lived near Shamokin, PA for a small amount of time. Bronson Pinchot.
He lives in the East Stroudsburg area.
No way!
I know people have seen him recently, and when I say recently, I mean within the last, like, 6 to 8 months. At the Borders bookstore outside the Viewmont Mall.
Wow, because all I know is Davy Jones from the Monkees and Balky Bartokamus kind of lived in Shamokin area for a little bit, and that's like a big deal. And Iron Mike Sharp was dating a girl in my hometown too, so like that's another big celebrity. Yeah, Iron Mike Sharp would always come to, because like Shamokin was on the WWE map a little bit in the early 80s because they always would come and draw real well, so it was like a regular B town. It sounds so stupid to say now, but it really was. To the point that recently someone told me that on 24/7 there was a match where Gorilla Monsoon is talking. He's like, our referee, I believe he's from Shamokin, PA. And Gorilla goes, Shamokin, PA, nothing good ever came out of that town. I'm like, what? Like, yeah, he totally buries Shamokin on commentary. So I need to see it. I think it's like a Coco Ware Iron Mike Sharp match from 88 or something. So it's like, okay. But yeah, Shamokin's repping.
Like, why would you take a shot at Shamokin of all places? Like, seriously, Gorilla must have had a bad time, or like somebody stiffed him on a bar tab or something there, and he's holding a grudge against the entire town.
Yeah.
He really is. And like, granted, there's so many reasons to hate Shamokin. Blatant racism, uncleanliness, women that look like dudes, lots of teen mothers. Like, there's so much to dislike about Shamokin.
So wait, Shamokin's in the middle of Indiana? Like,
oh, look at you.
It's northeastern Pennsylvania in the middle of Indiana, because that all stuff is going around here too, believe you me.
True story. My fiance grew up 5 minutes from where they filmed that teen mom show with the chick that punched the dude or whatever. And, like, all of her family knows the chick.
Wow. Oh, yeah. I'm not hip to Teen Mom.
I've never seen that. No, I don't get it.
Oh, and I'm just, like, jealous of you guys. Because you're all like, this, and that. And, like, the only thing I have is the Ultimate Warrior was born, like, 20 minutes from where I live. So
there you go.
And, like,
that's awesome.
If that house isn't a shrine, then somebody in your town is really messing up.
True story. When we moved, I lived in a town called Rochdale, which is famous for the roach race, which is where they would legit fly in roaches from across the world. Like, you could buy a Swiss roach to race in this thing, I guess, because I bought one and they said it was from Switzerland, so I believe them. When we moved to Crawfordsville,
I got Claudia to verify that for you.
Exactly. But when we moved to Crawfordsville, which is where the Warrior was born when I was 8, no, we went to no less than 4 houses where once they found out I was a wrestling fan, they went, the Ultimate Warrior grew up here. True story. 4 different houses.
Shit.
Like, I just wanted to live at the house where the kid had, like, the Shaq Fu playset. Because I thought we got to keep it. So.
Real quick, I got to transition while we're still even, like, 2 stories removed from Perfect Strangers. When I was in college... My friend Amy played on field hockey team, and she had two coaches. Name, we'll just call them Jenny and Beatrice. And, like, their coaches looked like Bill Parcells and Cousin Larry. But they were females. So I'd be like, so, you know, what's Bill Parcells got for you guys this week? She gets so pissed. But, yeah, they were a lovely couple, and I'm sure they're raising dogs somewhere right now in a lovely town outside of Gettysburg, we'll say. I ramble on. So yeah, real quick, more Scranton Wilkes-Barre stuff. I'm trying to just completely purge all of this out of my brain right now.
We're gonna do like numerous shows because Tom Richards wants to come on, obviously talk to, because he has plenty of stuff to say as well. One of the things I want to talk about and actually lives in WWF infamy forever is the day that Barry Horowitz beat Skip, and he beat him right at the March Center in Wilkes University, correct? I think that's the name of the correct name of the building. I know it happened in Wilkes. And also, there was another TV taping prior to it. This was right after – this had to be in 93. This had to be right after Lex Luger turned babyface, because I remember them showing on the video board. I remember them showing on the video board what happened on the USS Intrepid. I think it was like right in 93, and I think the – that was for Superstars, and then I guess the other one was for Action Zone, which was the show that lasted only for a couple years and didn't really quite catch on Sunday mornings.
I was chatting with Tom about this the other day because he actually put up the WWF 94 blog yet. I guess that's correct pronunciation.
Oh, yes.
Yes, that is the correct
pronunciation. Right, and the newest one was up today. I didn't get a chance to read it. I'm very upset with myself, and that's exactly what I'm doing after listening to recording this, and that's what you should all do
better
after listening to this. And I didn't mean to plug, but it's awesome because it was June of 94 that they did TV there. It was the day after or 2 days after the King of the Ring where Owen won, and it was awesome. Like, there's so many cool things that I can't wait to see, like, how the TV is, like, how you're going to react to the TV from that time. But there was a TV that they did beforehand, which was like in between the Luger turn, I guess. It was like right before it, but this TV with all the setup of like Million Dollar Man was there, and he was like saying that Luger's going to join the Million Dollar Corporation, and Tatanka's like, no, he's not. And it was all like the Undertaker's coming back sort of stuff. Because at the beginning of the show, they did like one match, and it was Waltman versus Louis Piccoli was the opening match. And then they filmed four episodes of the Heartbreak Hotel right in a row, and then they went to the show. And, like, I think they were doing, like, Duke Drozdy versus Lawler at the time as well, maybe. My time on that one might be a little bit off. But there was also a dark match tryout of Phi Delta Slam, those dudes that were in TNA or still in TNA or whatever. But it was, like, 100 years ago, and they were, like, nowhere near as fat as they were then. And I don't know what their names are or were for their characters in TNA as Phi Delta Slam. But I remember they had, like, real names. It was, like, first and last names. It was, like,
D-Day.
Bill Jones and Stan something or other. Because they would have the dudes go into the crowd sell, like, the foam Razor Ramon razors and, like, nonsense like that, trying to get chants started for Stan because the Executioners had heat on him during the match. And the match was horrible. It was the shit. The entire crowd was dead the entire time. And I felt bad because, you know, maybe if I cheered, Phi Delta Slam could have been, like, the next tag team champions. Or at least got killed by the Head Shrinkers, like, 6 months later.
The Quebecers debuted in Wilkes-Barre, too, I believe, as well. I think that was, like, their Superstars debut. The awesome match, if you remember that match. Which is going to be the next debut match, Tom, for the website next week, by the way.
Find me a link, brother, and it's on there.
All right. Boom.
So, yes, that March show, living in Taylor and having to go to Wilkes-Barre, that was one of the first times that I drove on Interstate 81. I was so nervous. That's how long I was, again, that's 100 years ago for me, but I was like, I'd literally just gotten my license like a month beforehand, and I'm like, I'm driving on 81, I'm so scared. And then,
oh my God.
This is so cute.
I totally remember my first Interstate 81 drive, too. It was so scary. It was like the Frackville exit. I didn't like it. Anyway. I fucking love you, man. This is great. There's so many parallels you guys don't even understand. It's classic.
I didn't want to bring up the radio show that I hosted in college as well that I got kicked off of for taking phone calls. But again, it's a very parallel life. It's very frightening.
Yeah. Fucking crazy.
Rob, do you remember that Quebec? I know you're such a huge Quebecers fan. Do you remember that debut match that they had?
Yeah, they tore shit up. few weeks. I remember one match where they did the Le Bomb de Rougeau, which is like the guy holds him up and then Jacques comes with a giant dick to the face off the top. And then like they fall down and then it transitions into a Boston Crab and then like dude does the leg drop on the guy's head and then like they do like this fantastic cannonball thing off the top rope which killed everybody. So like yeah, I vaguely remember that.
Senton thing, right?
Yeah. Mm.
That was killer. They would flatten dudes with that. It was awesome.
Yeah, the Quebecers were like all time best. I love them. I like them both a lot. Like I think Quebecer Pierre really deserved way more than he got in wrestling because he was great.
Now, weird question. Did they like?
The weird question. What does Marisa Burke have in common with Quebecer Pierre? No. No. They both have glass eyes, homie.
How dare you?
They have glass eyes, man. I'm telling you now. Anyway, I'm sorry.
While you besmirched the good name of Marisa Burke.
I was going to ask because you know, the theme song and all of the Quebecers. Like, a lot of dudes in the WWF back then, like, they debuted under, like, another name. But then when they were on TV, they debuted as, you know, whatever they were. Did the Quebecers have, like, a weird TV match where they were, like, the Mounties?
They never announced them. They never said, like, what their names were. They just kind of came down and debuted. It was actually Men on a Mission, actually. It wasn't their debut, but it was they were also on the show right before they started, too. Like, and they never really kind of said, I guess, their name, although I guess that was kind of implied by their theme song. But anyway.
Yeah, man. Men on a Mission and PN News were so vital to my I was in the rap before them. I grew up with like Run DMC and the Beastie Boys and Stetsasonic and Eric B and Rakim. I was really not the normal little white kid in Shamokin, really. However, when PN News and Men on a Mission came on the scene, shit, I still remember all their raps to this day. Like, I would regale you all with them, but maybe we'll make that special sideshow. Emphasis on sideshow, really. But really loved. Well,
all the words to the rap that Men on a Mission did with the Macho Man to hype up the match with Lex Luger and Yokozuna at SummerSlam, we need to talk later.
Yeah, it's a good YouTube video. I highly suggest everyone look for it. But, like, I used to think their names were Flavor and Flavus. And I've told people that, too, and I'll just be very honest about how stupid I am as a human. When they did their initial promo, they're like, we're on a mission! We're on a mission! Dun, dun. And then, like, dudes start rapping. It's like, Flavor to the ref! Flavus to the right, and I thought like it was like Flavor Flav, and one was Flavor and the other one was Flavus, is what it sounded like. Flavors to the left and Flavus to the right, but Flavus sounded different at one point, so I just thought, wow, their names are wild and wacky, but then they didn't have those names. They were Maybell and Mo, which is way better. Amazing. But yeah, man, I used to love when Mabel, the world's wrestling waterbed, would like hurt opponents every week. It was great,
dude. How would like do you think dudes reacted when Mabel's like, okay, I'm gonna give you a spinning wheel kick with this huge leg of mine?
Oh man, like, he put such a hurt on so many humans. He would drop the big ass off the second rope and like land on you. Like, he hurt he ended careers. Like, his name was Randy Orton or something. It's crazy.
Like, the fact that Vince brought in a fatter dude than Yokozuna, like, right after Yokozuna debuted, and it was, like, twice as tall, too. It was, like, mind-blowing.
Have you seen them recently?
I know that Mo was fatter than Mabel.
I tell everyone, the Mabel is no longer the fattest, and it's not even Mo. Oscar Men on a Mission is now the fattest of all of them. I think I don't know what happened. Diabetes set in. I don't fucking know, but they are all like 500 pounds. And like the one that was a rapper is like gigantic. So we hope that they put the cornbread down and pick up some vegetables real quick because we want them all to live for many more missions in this life. But man, they're all fat as shit right now.
I'm surprised
you've gone. That Mabel did for some fly-by-night company or whomever that is. I don't know if you saw that Mabel shoot interview. It's really good.
Oh, the orbital bone.
The orbital bone. Have you seen the orbital bone? He's like, that's what I'm going to Undertaker and he broke his orbital bone. It was awesome. But like, aside from him misspeaking on an orbital bone, it's an unbelievable shoot. I completely agree with you. And he seems like a really nice guy. And I like that flyby company, whoever the hell they are. They did one with King Kong Bundy, which if you haven't seen the King Kong Bundy shoot by Flyby Night Company.
The Bundy one is top of the food chain, awesome. Which one stinks to high heaven? The Zeus one. The Zeus one stinks.
Yeah, me and my friend knew that one was going to be bad when we saw that it was like a worked shoot. And like, no one likes those. So he's like, yo, I'm really Debo. It's like, come on, dude. No, you're not. Wrestling fans are kind of stupid sometimes, but come on. We don't really think he's Debo. I think his eyes really crossed. I think he's got like a shoot eye crossing. Yeah. I think that's true.
He's got a very high opinion of himself and a very high opinion of like what his place in the history of the wrestling business is. And like, I'm thinking like, okay, well maybe he's joking around. Like maybe he knows that he was kind of like a goof. And then like, nope, he's taking it seriously. Like he's comparing his time in WWF and WCW to his like 30-second performance that was in the Dark Knight movie, and he's like, Oscar-winning movie, Oscar-winning director, biggest draws in all of wrestling, who was there with them, what's the common denominator that puts them all together? Me. And it's like, really? Really? You're out of your mind.
I liked it when he said he's like, the voice of Barack Obama. Yeah. I know Obama. Call me, motherfucker. It's like, come on, dude, you don't know Obama. So yeah, shoot interviews are good, especially when they're done by fly-by-night companies we don't know the names of. They're so awesome. Like King Kong Bundy shoots, like all-time great. If you haven't seen the Robert Fuller shoot, check it out. It's really good. He's he's everyone's senile old grandfather, just telling stories of the olden days.
Dude didn't like Feinstein like try at, like kind of alluding to his huge endowment at one point?
Well, that was awkward. A couple W's in that word. It was a little awkward. But, like, eventually, if you could get aside all that business, it's really good. My favorite's like, I think Missy Hyatt said you had, like, an 18-inch. And he's like, oh, well, I don't know how Missy Hyatt would know.
Well, now
now all of our southern listeners as well. It's like,
I love how he became Yosemite Sam.
Well, you know,
he fully talked about Robert Fuller's endowment in his book, and he also talked about Scorpio's endowment in his book.
I was gonna say, Foley like talked about dude schlongs more than Missy Hyatt did in her book.
And that's why Foley's
awesome.
Everyone talks about it. Like, I remember Bill Payne said he brought the knowledge on Robert Fuller, too. My favorite Bill Payne story is, like, he's like, one time me and Robert Fuller went to one of those 80s, you know, put-in-quarters tanning places because we were going to a show. And it was one of these super mega, like, astro tanning beds that, like, if you go in for, like 5 minutes, you're just torqued. So like they both went in for like 10, so like they got out, they're like wah, wah, wah. You can see like the energy coming off them, and he said they wrestled like two lobsters that night, like barely touching each other. I was like, that's awesome. So yeah, beware the tanning bed.
So that company, so it sounds like they only do really good shoot interviews with like morbidly obese guys. Like,
you know, if I ran a shoot interview company, I would only do morbidly obese gentlemen that took steroids or maybe people that wore face paint. That would be my niche. Like, I think everyone needs a niche in life, and that would be the one I'd be going for.
Then it's a shame that Jeep Swinson died.
I would do
one shoot interview, and then I would retire a millionaire. It would be like, you know, those round tables that Feinstein would do. It'd be like, oh, two random people who never had anything to do with each other in their lives, and like, let's see how it works out, you know. I would do, you know, whatever money it would cost me to do it, it would be worth it because it would sell millions. It would be Cornette, Raven, and Foley, and then I can just retire a millionaire.
Exactly. Even if it wasn't good, for some people, reason people really like listening to Raven talk.
Yeah, I can listen to Raven talk until I'm blue in the face. Like, I'm the guy who gets the notification on my phone. It's like, ooh, there's a new Raven vlog up on his YouTube site, and I listen to it on my phone.
Dude, Raven finding YouTube is like Raven. The Ravens finding YouTube was like the best thing in 2010 because, and I meant 2010, not 2011. Like, he found it 2010 and it was amazing because he seems like amazed that he's just able to talk into his computer and people will love him. And he just rambles on, like, he talked about Brian Pillman dying. It was like Brian Pillman and then like ham sandwiches and like a movie he watched. Like, wrestlers finding the internet is really awesome. Like,
yo, I get more creeped out every time I see my you might want to friend this person on Facebook, because there are people on Facebook that are like, even I'm like, him? Yeah, like, it's so obscure. Like, Patrick Tanaka. I want to friend Pat Tanaka like I want to live tomorrow.
Dude, if you give him $300, I'll send you to Michinoku Pro.
He probably would. Him and he's a quality human being. Him and Jamie Dundee, I'm sure.
I want to find out what happened to like his 3-week push in WCW, because I'm watching like the 94 WCW now, and they're like pushing him.
I was in the middle of it with you.
Yeah, like him and Haito, as they called him, which they did not call them partners. They did not call like one of them his manager. They were countrymen. That was all that they could refer to them as. But then they wore like alternate color, like Oriental Express gear, just so they could get away with them being the Orient Express. But like, no, they were getting like this Uber push, and then like all
and
of a sudden.
Tom, wait, Rob, did you read the WCW blog deck from today?
No.
Yeah, it's on the site. It's lovely.
Make him guess who the other partner is, like the one main person, and make Rob guess. He'll never guess in a million years who they were teaming up with Arn Anderson to feud with the Orient Express.
They did an angle to set up a tag match with the Orient Express against Arn Anderson and somebody else. Guess who it was?
WWE 94, and then wipe your memory because it's no one that you would ever remember from
Brady Boone.
Dude, Brady, close.
Brady
close.
Boone.
Though Brady Boone was on a show like 2 weeks ago on this deal I'm doing. He was on there as, I forget his name, but he was like a masked Japanese dude that wrestled Steve Austin.
Dude, I had a 15-minute conversation with Gabe Sapolsky at the Dragon Gate table during King of Trios just about how awesome Brady Boone was. Like, Brady Boone is the man, dude. You go back to 93, 94 WCW worldwide tapings, and, like, Brady Boone is probably in the best match every time. He's so good.
But no, they set up an angle where Arn Anderson came out and made the save for Kenny Kendall.
And they were love Kenny Kendall. I definitely know who he is.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, they set it up, and I thought, like, they kind of made it out like Kenny Kendall was going to be, like, Arn Anderson's protege.
Like, Kenny Kendall was very good. There was also someone named, there were two guys called Tames and Trout. Sonny Trout. Rick Tames. Yes. And they were really good. But, like, they never.
So it's pronounced Tames? Because I always thought it was, like, Thames.
No, Tames and Trout. And they really. On a better day, they could have ended up being Tex Slashinger and Shanghai Pierce. Like, it just didn't fall in their favor. But Tames and Trout were good. Who are other wimpies? I remember the Gambler, obviously. There was a guy, Nasty Ned Brady was the man. He should have been big.
Do you remember a guy by the name of Matt Shepard?
Uh-uh.
Like, there was a jobber named Matthew Shepard, and you don't know how hard it is to not make, like, really tasteless jokes when I write about his matches.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
It's, like, so difficult, but whatever.
But Rob, you're really doing yourself a disservice for not reading the WCW blog text. Just because of all the screen caps, just in this one alone, the Dave Hart Butch Long screen cap and the Brad Anderson screen cap.
Dude, Brad Anderson.
Ever.
Brad Anderson is Gene's kid, am I correct?
I think so.
Yeah. He looks like if Alex Shelley and Matt Hardy had a baby. Like, dead on. It's kind of freaky. Like,
yes, it's very frightening.
And then Dave Hart is this, like, hideous-looking dude who wore, like, the Triple H, like, denim vest over leather jacket deal. And Triple H was in the match before it. So I totally think, like, Hunter was watching the match and was like, I gotta do this.
Yeah, Terror Rising knew. He saw the future.
Yeah.
The future was good. Yo, I thought Johnny B. Badd. Like, Johnny B. Badd, like, first of all, that's a good shoot interview, by the way. He did, like, a Ring of Honor shoot interview. It was great. But, like, Johnny B. Badd, he was a wimpy guy. Mark Marrowitz, even. He was, like, a wimpy guy against Vader back in the day. And it was, like, one of those times you see, like, a wimpy guy, and you're like, why isn't he the TV champion? Like, this guy's jacked, he's tan, looks like he goes to the gym, put some paint on him, he's the champ, you know, but, like, it never happened. But then when he became Johnny B. Badd, I was so excited for all the wrong reasons, I guess. I was just like, yeah,
which,
he's getting a
push. I know they're not giants, Rob. I go, but how happy must you be that with Chikara, Oberyn, and Kodama, dudes with face paint again? Come on.
I love it. I love it so much, and I'm going to share with you another story. Someone who will remain nameless is making fun of me to this day because what are their names? Oberyn and
Kodama.
Kodama.
Yeah, so I'm like, yo, you know these guys? And person's like, no, man.
Oh,
I'm like,
I know this story.
I'm like,
go ahead.
What Japanese fit did they come from? Are they like Osaka Pro? And dude who knows what he's talking about's like, are you fucking stupid? I'm like, wait, what are you talking about? And he's like, they're not Japanese, bro. I'm like, yeah, they are. They're Oberyn and Shibuya-gan. He's like, he's like, no, dipshit. They're clearly like two dudes from the United States. I'm like, I don't know, man. Face paint knows no race. And like, I guess they're not Japanese. But you know what? Maybe they are. I don't know. I don't want to break any violations here. But I guess they might not be. There's a chance. But I like the face paint. I like it. It adds the anonymity. Like, it's funny because I always knew Demolition was from the U.S., so it's kind of weird with these guys. I was completely thrown off. But I'm a big fan of the undersized wrestler. I think they both have a lot of talent. They remind me of the State Patrol. Buddy Lee Parker and Lieutenant James.
They
are
right. Built just like them.
Like a
like
good
little
undersized,
dude.
Yeah, good undersized, fundamentally sound tag team.
Man.
Love them. Consider me a fan.
Huge fan.
I was going to say, poor Kodama is not going to be known by everybody as, like, Shibupadu because of you, Rob.
Oh, sorry. I forgot his name. They're both awesome. So if I don't know their names yet, it's just because I'm stupid and don't know how to pronounce them. But aside from that, I didn't know Ophidian and Amasa until, like, last year. So I'd be like, the black guy and that other guy? What?
Now that there's two black guys, it totally throws you off.
I know. No, I think I could tell one from the other. But I still don't know one.
He knows a Mr. Hughes trainee when he sees him, right?
I do. Let me tell you. AR Fox, of course. But yeah, it was unbelievable.
But
anyway.
By the way, one question while we still have you on the line, Leonard. Is there anything creepier in the world than Steve Kern and Bobby Eaton in those sparkling jackets? That's bad attitude.
See, I don't think it's creepy. Like, Bobby Eaton definitely looks uncomfortable in those. And the next thing that he moved on to after that was he was Sir Robert, right? That didn't happen yet.
Yeah, it was...
I don't remember Bad Attitude having a very long life on TV. But Steve Kern, like, especially just coming back from WWF and Skinner, and, like, now here he is with this, like, day-glow bleach blonde skullet, and he's all, like, ultra-tan, no beard, and, like, really, really creepily happy. Like, he's way more creepy than Bobby Eaton in all those pictures. Way more creepy.
See, Bobby Eaton just kind of looks like somebody's mom, whereas Steve Kern is, like, the creepiest guy at the nursing home. Like, big smile on his face, tan, looking like some dude from, like, an infomercial trying to sell, like, a timeshare.
I get the idea about Bobby Eaton looking like someone's mom, because when I was home to Shamokin for the holiday, I was driving back, and when I was around Ashland, Pennsylvania, Ricky Morton drove by me, except he had breasts. So I was like,
dude, you have no idea how many chicks down here look like Ricky Morton.
Yeah,
and,
man.
Like, true story, I worked with a chick when I was in high school. I worked at Walmart, and there was this cart pusher lady there who was, like, in her 60s. And she looked like Greg the Hammer Valentine. Like, dead on. It was kind of scary.
All I know is I kept waiting for this lady to jump out of her truck, do the little roll, and make the hot tag. I was like, what is going on here?
Dude, have I ever told you the story about Ricky Morton working the indie show, like, over by my parents' house in, like, 2000?
Oh,
I was in middle school. So
you have not.
Him and Chris Hamrick worked as the new Rock and Roll Express. Of course, they advertised Gibson the entire time. But...
that's an upgrade in my book, so yeah.
I didn't know at the time. I was, like, just mad that the cross-eyed dude wasn't there. But anyway, so after the show, we're hanging out. There's a million show stories I could tell you about the show itself, but, you know, we've only got so much time. But after the show, there's this chick from, like, my sixth grade class who was like this little short girl, and she was, of course, the only 12-year-old that was bigger laying down than she was standing up. But that's beside the point. She was the skanky one, let's just say, out of the class. And she walks over to a pickup truck, right? This just is going to end up horribly. And you see Ricky Morton's head pop out. And she was probably like 13, 14.
Oh,
but
no.
You absolutely see her going down into Ricky Morton's lap. And
oh, no.
To make sure nobody could see it, Ricky Morton pops open the door of his pickup truck or whatever car he was in, pops it open and just like opens it. And that's all the protection, all the anonymity he needed to make sure nobody saw what was going on.
And he did not learn from the sins of Chris Champion before him. Jeez, come on, man.
No,
that's crazy.
It's somehow that trumps the story of how he wrestled a dude named Stone Cold on an indie show in 2000. That looked like New Jack.
Huh. Oh. Stone Cold.
Yeah, there was Stone Cold.
Ricky Morton,
the Cold Brothers.
Ricky Morton's very angry. Like, you want to talk about a good shoot? His shoot's amazing. Like, he's so full of piss and vinegar that, like, he hates every question mark at the end of a sentence during this shoot. It's unbelievable. He just tears everyone. Just tears everyone a new one.
Something with little dudes. Have you seen this Mike Dudley shoot?
Oh, dude, F him, dude. I'm sorry, but he's a prick. I don't like him.
That is the most horrible thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I love, like, literally 99.8% of all wrestling people, but Spike Dudley can go play in traffic. I'm not a fan. I can't wait till Gabe books Spike Dudley for FIP, but yeah, it's, I don't know.
He's going to book him for you. He's going to book him for you, Evolve, and have him do commentary with you.
Dude, I'd be shaking like a leaf. I'd way rather be sitting next to my good friend Leonard Chikarson, let me tell you.
And you know what? I hate to say it, but there's one person, like, okay, Ricky Morton. Morton's angry. Spike Dudley's angry. But man, oh man, somebody who's supposed to like be like fun loving and somewhat, at least like his in ring persona time.
Al Snow
is the angriest person in the world.
Yes.
Angry for no reason. No reason he's angry. And he's just angry all the time.
Yeah, he was at King of Trios, right?
Yeah, he's angry. Yes, that's exactly. So yeah, like he's angry everywhere. He's omnipresently angry at everything and everyone. My favorite was his shoot when Gabe's like, he always has to ask everybody, how many pops are there in a wrestling match? And of course, everyone gets it wrong.
What was the best match at WrestleMania 3?
Savage and Savage and Steamboat, right?
No, it was Hulk versus Andre. Go kill yourself.
Yeah, I like that he told Gabe
Oliver on the kayfabe commentaries deal he did, and he looked like he was going to pick up like a spike next to him and put it through Sean Oliver's ear.
Dude, he told Gabe to suck his dick because he didn't know how many pops in a match there were. Like, that's like the greatest thing of all time.
I thought didn't he tell like Feinstein that too or something?
I know he's like, suck my dick. I'm like, what are you doing, dude? Like, is it really like War and Peace right now over a shoot interview question? Like. He's losing his mind. I said to Gabe, I'm like, how do you react to that? He's like, I just laughed. I'm like, good.
Well, you know what? I was going to say, I don't know why I've never asked Gabe this. You know the Ken Patera shoot interview?
Yes.
That Gabe did with them for Ring of Honor? Like, didn't Ken Patera say he was going to slap Gabe in the face or something?
Yeah, I think it's out that that's a work. If it's not, I'm sure I'll get an angry email. But that was a work. Like, I guess he asked them beforehand, like, would you mind if I bring this up? And he's like, I don't feel like talking about it. So he's like, well, what if we – they're going to get mad if we don't ask anyway. So how about I ask and you just flip out on me? So that's basically how that went down. Apparently Kenny Patera was not, like, a complete idiot. Even though when I saw him at Cauliflower Alley – he was definitely on point. Like, he was so out of his mind. And, like, you have not lived until you sat next to Ken Patera, who is catcalling a Robbie Ellis singles match. It was awesome. I won't even go into details. It was as rich and beautiful as you might imagine it would be. But, yeah, Kenny Patera loves McDonald's, as we all do.
Is Mike still on the line, or did he run away to his little hockey match?
Oh yeah, I'm getting ready to head out in a few minutes because I had the Flyers game on the DVR, so it's like a crucial game, so I might be bouncing in a few minutes. I don't know when we were going to be wrapping it up. But what's up, though, Chikarson?
Well, no, I was going to want to. I wanted to make sure that while you were still on the line, we got this in. That aren't we supposed to try to get Naylor to get Twitter on this
yes.
show?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Why don't you have Twitter, Rob?
I know. What's everybody, I know. There's like a list of 75 people that ask. I don't know. I guess I should get one. I'm slowly creeping toward it. I've put it off. I just don't think I have anything that interesting to say, but I guess it's not all about that. Like, I guess you could actually see what other people are doing and saying. So I'll probably get one. I got to find a good domain name. I don't even know what they call these things. What do they call them?
Handles.
I need a good Twitter handle, so I'll be working on those. So when you see Rusty Brooks and Barrio's number one fan, you'll know what's up.
Dude, it's gotta be Lil Shamokin. Duh.
Yeah.
Like, that's the obvious one.
Okay. Tiger Chung Lee rules Shamokin.
Come on, what about Rob F. and Naylor muscle pose? That'd be a good one.
Yeah, there it is, and I'll be having the world in my hands. It's going to be amazing. So, yeah, man, I'm working on it. I swear to God, when it happens, hopefully everyone will rejoice and be happy. But I'm kind of baby-stepping toward it.
Dude, the number one reason why you should get a Twitter is because Jamie Dundee is on Twitter, and I don't think he gets that it's on the internet. Because he does it all from his phone. And I swear to you, he's put his home phone number on there like 3 or 4 times already. Like, because I just think he thinks that he's, like, texting people. Like,
Scott Armstrong talked to Tom and told him that he thought the match that he put up against Dean Malenko was, like, the best match he ever had or something like that. Yeah,
like, that was
weird. Tom made Scott Armstrong's weekend by putting him up on Malenko Friday. Remember
that? Yeah.
That is pretty cool, though. I like the idea that people can read what you're saying and be like, wow, that guy's not so bad.
Damn, Tajiri, though, hasn't responded.
And Punk is awesome on it, too, Rob. Like, Punk is so good on it. Like, he rarely will even talk about wrestling. He'll just, like, talk about, like, everything but wrestling. It's real.
Yeah,
it's
I hear his is pretty awesome, so I'll have to check
it. Yeah, I know you and Punk or what have you, and I have, like, a love-hate relationship with Punk. But I'm a secret Punk lover, and his Twitter is awesome, even though he's been strangely quiet lately. I wonder if there's anything going on.
Yeah, I don't know. But he's always nice. He's very nice to me. He's a good person. But yeah, hopefully everything's good with him. I guess that would be a reason to get on it. So you know what? Listen to this shit. I used to be on AIM a lot, right? And I would talk to him via AIM like all the time for like years. And like, I don't know if he's not on it anymore, but I forgot what my AIM password was. And then I went to go check what it was in my email, and then, like, I couldn't find the AIM email. This is probably from, like, 1997, so I was like, what? So then I was just so lazy. I was just like, I don't need to go on this anymore in my life. So I don't talk to him as often as I used to, but he's a good dude, and I definitely want to check out his Twitter, too. But we'll see.
I know Matt Turner claims to still be in somewhat contact with CM Punk, but
good.
Who knows?
Matt Turner, yes.
Turner is the man.
Come on.
Matt Turner.
Back around to Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, Scranton area. Come on.
Matt Turner was at a show in Shamokin or Mount Carmel, Pennsylvania. Horrible show, but Matt Turner was there. And I think Anthony Franco might have been there too. Maybe not. Somebody was there with Turner.
2007 and Vin Gerard was on the show as well.
Yes, it was. So, like, yeah. So I went up to him, and I'm like, oh, my God, you know, Matt Turner. I'm like, never forget Pittston Staircase or whatever, where it is. And he's like, oh, yeah, high fives all around. And, yeah, Dave Andrews is great and all this shit. And like, we're going back and forth. And I'm like, yeah, it's nice to meet you. He's like, oh, what's your name? I'm like, oh, I'm Rob Naylor. He's like, Rob Naylor. I'm like, wait, what? And then, like, all of a sudden he drags some other dude over to say hi to me. I'm like, what the fuck? And then I remembered, like, that whole Necro Butcher thing where Necro beat up the students. So then when they name dropped me, Necro and Joe, I guess the students would have seen that match. I'm like, who the fuck is that guy? So he's like, that's Rob Naylor. And I'm like, oh, hi. Nice to meet you guys. But Matt Turner is a sweetheart. He's a great dude. Like, I always liked all Punk's kids, like Pelly, all of them, they all just had a lot of heart, and they tried hard, which is all you can ask for.
I should know this, but for whatever reason, it's just escaped my mind. That first class that Punk had was 5 dudes. Anthony Franco, Matt Turner, Davey Andrews, Shane Hagedorn, actually 6 dudes, Evan Starsmore, and there was one other dude.
Evan Starsmore, yes.
Yeah, there was, Kevin Sorbo was an awesome, awesome dude, but there was one more dude who had, like,
chubby,
long, blonde,
chubby,
dirty hair and, like, a rat face and stuff. He wrestled
he had
one
chubby
match, and then he never appeared.
He was chubby, and he was on, like, the first show they had was, like, a pre-show in, like, 10-2-2004. There you go. I still remember Ring of Honor days. So, yeah, 10-2-2004, Midnight Express reunion show, and during that day in Philly, all Punk's dudes had their first matches, which I thought somebody got killed with a Carnage Crew pile driver. I always thought it was really dumb that in someone's first match, someone took a pile driver off a second rope, but I digress. So, like, yeah, during that, there was this little chubby guy, had long hair, and he didn't really stick it out. But then I think Pelly was, like, in the first class and a half. Like, I always thought Pelly was a Aries guy, but Pelly was actually the end of Punk.
He was like that next group of dudes, because like I said, I thought it was five, but it was six, because I'd totally forgotten about Evan Starrs more, but I think he's like living down in Florida. He got hurt in a match a while ago.
Yes,
like,
he did.
He was such a cool dude, man. I miss him.
Yeah, he was good. I think he's doing a little better now, thank God. But yeah, Evan Starrs more. I remember there was a guy, Antonio Blanca. And the famous story
he was another dude who was in the Pelly class. He was like in that class and a half that Punk did.
And the famous story was when Davey Andrews was blowing up, and by blowing up, I mean beating people up for real in Chikara and other places, like, or getting a fight with Darren Corbin. Yeah, I remember Davey Andrews was kind of coming along, and it was very intense, at least, or he projected believable intensity because it was probably for real. But I remember being on a classic IM with Gabe, and he's like, this guy coming up now, Antonio Blanca. I'm like, yeah? He's like, yeah. He's like, him and Davey Andrews could possibly be the next AJ and Danielson. I was like, yeah. I'm like, oh my God. I can't wait to see these guys. So, yeah, that didn't really work out.
You know what, Rob, you say that your memory may not be good, but you remember the most important things. That's the best thing I've heard in my entire life. In my entire life, Davey Andrews and Antonio Blanca are going to the next AJ and Daniel. That's awesome.
Oh, man.
Now, Davey Andrews was doing like a IWM Mid-South tour around that time. Now, Tom, did you end up seeing him on any of those shows out
yes,
there?
Yes, I was going to bring it up. When you guys were talking about Evan Starrsmore. Have any of you ever seen these Shades of Evan Starrsmore gimmick?
Yeah, when he was like he had like those like Hollywood style glasses and like the shiny jack and all that jazz.
Yes,
it was awesome.
He wrestled – he did that gimmick once at IWA, and I just remember it was awesome because he just randomly came – because the first tour of IWA, he was just, like, playing 11 stars more, and then he comes out with that. And, like, every 3 minutes in his match, he would turn around and go, Shades of Evan Starrsmore, and point at his sunglasses. I'm like, that is so witty. I love you. But no, dude, Davey Andrews, like, he had put him over – like, he was both Road Warriors in one. Like, he beat, like, everybody.
Yeah.
And then he just – fell away. Like, he was,
yeah,
I think, the only...
To be fair, like, honestly, Davey Andrews, I don't know what his attitude was, but I know Punk was really high on him, and I know that he... I thought he had to step up on everybody else. I remember Antonio Blanca had a couple really good pre-show matches, but then he quit really quick, so he never had a chance to become, like... He couldn't even be, like, Brian Walsh, no less Brian Danielson. He was just in and out, so, like... It just didn't work out. Brian Walsh, great wimpy guy from the early 90s. New England area, check him out. But, yeah, he never had a chance to become anybody. But, you know, I do remember Davey Andrews. He's a little aggressive. I remember that Chikara show. I remember I went to that show at the
State Young Kids. Lions Cup, man. That was the best shows ever.
She's just coming off a freaking speaker, and, like, it's such a good comedy, and, like, good Jigsaw and Hella Wicked tore it up, if I'm not mistaken, that day, and, like... There's like – I think Skyda might have been on it. It was just a really well-balanced show. And then there was
that was
crazy,
like,
Ring of Honor
brawl. Yeah, Cheech was walking like on the banister, like high above the staircase. And it's actually really awesome too, to go back and watch it, because Larry Sweeney actually does commentary on that and the mansion. So it's real cool with Sweeney on commentary. But, yeah, they did that. That's when Anthony Franco gave Cloudy the headbutt, and he busted him wide open. And everybody just like lost their shit because – it was so loud, and unfortunately, the didn't quite pick it up. But that was also when Davey Andrews threw a jug of water, like a gallon of water, like right at Darren Corbin, I think it was, in like a four-way tag.
Dude, it was such a violent, violent match. And I remember Punk had left the Indies at that point, because I think it was like late summer 2005. and he was like going to OVW, and I remember getting home that night so excited, going like, dude, your boys just went crazy at Chikara. He's like, yeah, he's like, keep tabs on those guys. I'm like, oh, I'm keeping them, all right. I'm like, those guys really that was pretty awesome. And they had a couple more matches in Chikara, I remember. They were always really well placed on those shows, and it was something different. But you know, it just sucks that maybe everything didn't really totally work out for all of them. But like I said, they had a lot of heart, and they always seemed to really give it a go in there, you know?
They all went out to November, October of 2004, right after, like literally right after they had their debut match, they all went out to IW Mid-South and did that quadruple shot that Ian booked. Mm-hmm. I know there was like Thursday night show that had like 40 people. It had like all the TNA guys on. It was crazy.
Dude, yeah. Nobody at Evansville. Yes. That's because Ian wanted – no, there was actually a show that this is a story I heard, was that somebody at IWA, like as a joke, labeled whatever for Smart Mark. It was called Noblesville, and they labeled the tape or whatever, Nobody in Noblesville, and sent it to Smart Mark as a joke. And then that almost became the show's name.
Oh my goodness.
But it was like 12 people, and like Hero wrestled Nate Webb for like 40 minutes, and Shades of Evan Starsmore and all that. But no, Evansville. Yes, Ian decides, hey, this dude in Evansville was letting me run the Coliseum, but he fired me, so I'm going to run every match ever against his show on a Wednesday night. Didn't promote it. Drew like 15 people for like AJ Sydal 2. Or this might have even been the next month, because that was one where Cannon broke his collarbone and the match gets Austin Aries. And like the main event was
that
like AJ.
Right, that was part of that. That was part of that quadruple shot. That was the Saturday night
they ran
show. Yeah,
because they ran one TPI weekend, and then they ran one the next month too. And then the first one was the one where they did AJ Sydal twice in like 4 days. And the second one in Evansville in front of 20 people, the main event was like AJ, Saban, like I think Chris Daniels, and like some other TNA guy.
I'm looking at it right here. That was because that was the Evansville show. Austin Aries hurt Cannon. Main event was Daniel Saban, Petey, and AJ. But like that show was like so crazy. It had like Samoa Joe versus Abyss and Super Dragon versus BJ Whitmer, CM Punk versus Alex Shelley in like 2004. Like these are all like crazy matches. And then there was the Strong Style tournament the next night that like Kingston and Super Dragon just like killed each other. Oh, it was so awesome.
Yeah, I took it all for granted at the time, but like looking back, the fact that I saw all that stuff with like 20 other witnesses in the building, like it kind of blew.
You were at those shows?
I was at the Strong Style tournament. I was at a lot of the Nobody shows. I remember I was at some show in Lafayette in like January of 2004 where Matt Sydal did the spot that he's done a couple other times since, but he rarely does it. And he did it in front of like 20 people in Lafayette, where Austin Aries throws him up in the air and like Sydal like stands on Aries' shoulders like straight up for like 3 or 4 seconds, and then like drops it into a DDT. And I remember like Ian's like, these two are the next Golden. He was kind of like the next AJ and Daniels, like, a little closer. But then he rematched them on this show that he ran in front of like 90 people. Because he actually promoted this one for like 6 weeks. It was called One More Time, and it was like every match was a rematch from somewhere. It was like Joe and Homicide, Punk and Hero, which went like an hour, and it was kind of boring because Punk just kind of sat in a chin lock the whole time. It was not the famous 5904 match.
Wait, just looking at like the old IWA Mid-South results, and by the way, the one that you'd mentioned before, which was where am I looking here? It was in Bloomington. That was when Ian put Davey Anders over. But nonetheless, the Valparaiso hour match that Hero and Punk had, is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, the one that I saw was there was another one that where they went to like I think a 60-minute draw. The one in Valparaiso is famous for stories that I will not tell.
The last one they had, right?
Yeah, the last one they had was.
Yeah. I'll tell it. That's the one they got in a fight. Legit. It's so awesome. Like, even I know that one of the two doesn't really think it's that good a match, and I'm like, bro, it's like two brothers legit beating the shit out of each other. I love it. It's like my favorite match they've ever had. Like, I hope they are always pissed at each other when they wrestle.
And they did that on like a week's notice. Because Ian just all of a sudden, like on a Wednesday on the website, oh, by the way, Punk and Hero are gonna wrestle this Saturday. Isn't that awesome? We're like, what?
Because
that's how Ian was. But no, like, this show, like, and then, like, I remember, like, within all these, like, rematches in the middle of the show, like, Cabana comes out and the Delirious comes out, and we're like, awesome, this is going to be funny. And then H.C. Loke walks out.
Yes.
Who had never wrestled for IWA, never wrestled for him after that. Nobody knew why he was there. And
you know what? No one ever knew.
Loke, baby.
Yeah, no one ever knew. I remember one time he was a referee on an ECW show I saw in Pittsburgh. It's amazing I go to Pittsburgh and not Philly, by the way, to go see ECW shows. But anyway, I saw a show at the David L. Lawrence Center in Pittsburgh, and H.C. Loke was the referee, and Pierre-Carl Ouellet, again, full circle here, just comes out to the ring and destroys him with like 15 different sit-down variation powerbomb maneuvers, and I was like, wow. And then like I was like, wow, well, H.C. Loke takes great bumps. Yeah, I liked old Loke. Him and Pierre and him and Rick Blade are my two favorite H.C. Loke matches of all time. So,
This all reminds me, since I think they're like his kids. Ian ran a show in Highland once, and he promoted like Bradley and Boz, who were like his road warriors, against the Havana Pitbulls. But the big thing was Bobby Heenan was going to be in the Havana Pitbulls corner for some reason. Imagine that. And of course, like the day of, Ian's like, oh, the Havana Pitbulls, they aren't here. And this is like the height of like the Havana Pitbulls being over. And so he comes out, he's like, Havana Pitbulls aren't going to be here. And I got my hands in my sweatpants and I'm looking down because that's what I do. Funny comment to a fan. And then all of a sudden, Dunn and Marcos walk out. I think this had been like right after they had their big thing in Ring of Honor. But like they walk out. And people don't even think they're wrestlers until halfway through the promo. I recognize them, and like a couple of my friends recognized them, and then like some other people recognized them, and then they hit the "We're done in Marcos, and we're not going to take it anymore." And that's when everyone realized, oh, that's who they are.
Yeah, and dude, they were really good. Like, if you want to talk about underrated, that they never get talked about, but Dunn and Marcos were awesome. They really had a good little role on every show they were on. I'd like to know what they're up to now.
Well, you mentioned Pittsburgh, but they had that one killer match around that time with the wild cards, Kingston and Blackjack Marciano. They had it in IWC, and that was killer. I think Dunn is retired. Like, he's, you know, pardon the pun, but he's done. But Marcos is still wrestling upstate, like with Cheech and Cloudy and Brody and all those guys.
Yeah, man.
Mighty
Marcos now. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, dude, Wild Cards would have been like the best tag team. The Wild Cards would have been like the tag team of the decade if they just stick. Like, they were so great. Like, I love Eddie Kingston with every fiber of my being, but like, he had this certain asshole, but like kind of smart ass thing with Blackjack when they were together that it was just so beautiful. And like, you rarely have that great chemistry, and those two just had it. You know, they were great.
Dude, I remember
they were. And oh, just so awesome.
I was going to say, I got another awesome match I got to see in front of, like, no. Actually, there were people there. When Ian booked them against Tracy and Hamrick at, like, the tag tournament.
Uh-huh, all right.
Like, and they were all, like, stooged around everywhere. And then I guess they had, like, a better match at IWC or something. You guys might know better than me. But
yeah, I didn't see that one. They were good.
I think it's on some, like, somebody's compilation, either Tracy's or Eddie's or something, which, by the way, if you guys have not checked it, High Spots has a deal on their, like, High Spots TV deal. It's Tracy Smothers and Paula London riding in a car together, and they just filmed it. It's amazing. Like, one of the chapters is called, like, Developmental, and so it's, like, Paula London says, like, Lance Cade's name, and then Tracy Smothers is like, man, I went on my MySpace. By the way, this was recorded 3 months ago. Tracy goes, I went on my MySpace, and I saw Trevor Murdoch's blog, and I just cried, man. I just cried. And then he's like, I hate OVW. I hate it. And then Paul London's like, yeah, I hate it too. And then London starts burying Punk and Brent Albright. Because he's like, yeah, Paulie was all like kissing, you know, Vince's ass trying to get back on TV. So he just let Punk and Albright like book the TV and blah, blah, blah. And that's why they were doing 50-minute matches every week. And I didn't want to be on down there. And just he was just ranting, rambling about developmental. And then Tracy looks at him and he goes, you know what, man? Dragons always really loved country music. And London goes, really? That's awesome. And then he starts like listing off all the dudes that Dragons almost liked, and it was awesome.
That's my favorite topic switch of all time. Like, just like, you know, Giant Gonzalo, I wanted to use that. Anytime someone's talking to me about something I'd rather not be talking about, you know, Giant Gonzalez really enjoyed the country music.
Oh, dude.
Well, listen, I've been on for a while, and I got to wrap up my end of this. Mike, are you still there?
Mike, yeah, I was going to say Mike left like 10 minutes ago because he didn't see those flyers. I was going to say, yeah, we can probably wrap it up here because, yeah, we've been on for over an hour and a half, which –
Yeah, and I have no shame in saying this. I have to watch the reunion show for RuPaul's Drag Race. Very important.
There you
and
go.
I'm not even joking around. I'm not even joking around. Deadly serious.
Dude, as someone who watches Glee on the regular, like, I'm not giving you anything. Like, I adore Glee, but we can go on for an hour about that. We're going to cut it off there, though.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciated it. Good
thanks
time.
For being on, both of you, because this has been awesome. Like, Mike typed an IM to me right before he logged off, like, all caps, and this is the best show we've ever done. So
yeah, there you go. Yeah. Sweet. So, well, have us on again, man. I love Chikarson. He's my favorite.
I appreciate being a part of it. You know, I'm glad to get on here and talk with Rob. And again, I feel bad because, you know, Tom, you're not from the dirty PA like the rest of us be. But one time we're gonna get Tom Richards on here and we're gonna do like a marathon session. Like the four of us would need to get together, like live and in person, and just somebody videotape or something. Because again, I don't know if the phone can do it justice.
No.
Sounds like a plan,
talking
man.
Talking all horrible shows from up in the area, and you know we barely mentioned WNET, and that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's next show. We'll get to that. Don't you worry.
but I would be remiss if I did not mention, you know, to the people listening out there, that Chikara King of Trios, you could pick that up at smartmarkvideo.com or right through Chikara's website, chikarapro.com. Got to get the shield in, but, you know, did you guys get a chance to see King of Trios yet?
I have. I got to watch it. It showed up here, like, the Friday after it came out. I blew through it in, like, a day. It's great
stuff. I saw the first two nights live, and I love them, and I've seen the third night on DVD, and it is incredible. Everyone picked this stuff up, like, top to bottom, and the production is just out of control. Like, big ups to Smart Mark Video and anyone involved in producing this thing, because it's just incredible. And 123 Kid and Generico could be my match of the year right now. God bless.
It's a killer match. Killer, 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 because as soon as I got it, as soon as I got my copy of the DVDs, the first two matches I watched were that and Caban and Archibald Peck. That match is awesome as well.
It is awesome as well. Unbelievable opening match. Archibald Peck shocking the world. Really entertaining.
Unlike Shockwave, who puts over his character really well, quote unquote, third Super 8. That was horrible. But
I don't like saying bad things about no one, you know what I mean? But yeah. From what I heard, you know.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. I'll let them speak for themselves. But I think we are going to wrap this up. It's been great, and we will do this again because both Mike and I needed this positivity and awesomeness. But we'll be back probably Tuesday nightish.
Wait, one more thing before we go.
Yes.
Tom.
Yes.
Congratulations. Good luck this weekend with everything.
Thank you very much. I was actually going to bring up we're going to have Joe Gagne on like in the next couple of days. He's going to give me advice on how to be a married wrestling fan. It's going to be a fun little show.
You're getting married?
I'm getting married Saturday.
Well, congratulations, homie. How'd I forget this or not be in the loop for this? That's awesome, dude. Good for you, man.
Thank you. Yes.
I would have asked to be your ring bearer, but, you know, I'm sure you have a little child already doing that. So
we do. We have a little child that we've already taught how to do lung blowers. It's
that's
pretty
beautiful. True love always.
Now, and by the
now
way,
Alex a wrestling fan, or does she not?
She likes,
give a darn about
she likes MMA.
Nonsense?
Let's just say I watch wrestling in the other room when I watch it, or I watch it on my laptop with my earbuds in. She's not too into that scene, but if you put UFC on, we're both glued. But we are including some wrestling things because I shoehorned them in. Like, we're playing Bad Street USA at the reception, and someone's going to get drunk and yell at a black person because that's how things. No. Oh, and we're doing full contact musical chair, so I'm sure at some point someone's going to some spots. By the way, Rob, to put you on the spot about WrestleManawa,
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to be there. Yeah, like I'm making every effort to have a whole car full of people to go to WrestleManawa.
Dude, it's going September. To be. Dude, he has like 30 people booked already.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, it's gonna be crazy. Have you heard about this, Leonard?
Yeah, isn't it sometime in September he's having a show like somewhere?
Yeah, somewhere in southern Indiana. He doesn't quite have the building yet, but he has 30 people booked. WrestleManawa, September 3rd, I think. It's a Saturday. It's gonna be fun times. And then I was speaking of weddings. When Nick gets married, I cannot wait to be there because it's just gonna be like a locker room from like the '90s Southern indie scene. It's gonna be like full pain telling war stories and you know good times. No, with that we're gonna wrap up again. We'll probably be back on tomorrow night or so. Show Gagney. But thank you all for listening and sorry we ran long, Mike. You all have a nice evening.
Peace.